KCX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dabusky. An Army sergeant is in custody after he allegedly used his own weapon in a shooting that took place at Fort Stewart in Georgia earlier today, leaving five soldiers wounded. ABC's Louis Martinez reports from the Pentagon.
You are allowed to possess personal weaponry as long as it is properly registered and presented when you arrive on the base. And so any such thing as a concealed weapon is not allowed. So lots of questions remain about how exactly when he purchased this weapon and for what was the purpose.
President Trump in the Oval Office this hour alongside Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple. The tech company is announcing a $100 billion investment in American manufacturing. And that's on top of the iPhone maker's $500 billion investment it committed to earlier this year. The White House also says it's working towards setting up an in-person meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The couple accused of poisoning and attempting to poison multiple women have pleaded not guilty. Hal Van Doon and Andrea Whitaker are charged in the bizarre plot to stalk, poison, and kill women Van Doon had gone on dates with. The criminal complaint said the two were convinced that the women were Satan. Yesterday, both pleaded not guilty in Dane County Court. They're facing even more charges and big bail amounts in Rock County. In Rock County, Van Doon's cash bond is over $37 million and Whitaker's is $15 million. And today, the Voting Rights Act turns 60. It ensured equal right to vote for all people, regardless of race. Activists from the League of Women Voters are spending the day at the state capitol. Here's Terry Barr.
The League is highlighting why the Voting Rights Act is a promise and needs to be protected, especially right now. The U.S. Supreme Court is expected to hear cases which could change parts of the Voting Rights Act, including fair maps. Here's Wisconsin's League Executive Director, Deborah Krohn-Miller.
Our mission is to defend democracy and empower voters to elect your representatives. And those elected representatives are supposed to carry your voice to the Madison Capitol, to D.C., or to your municipal leader boards. And, you know, and when they fail to, that's the crisis that is the breach of our Constitution.
The Voting Rights Act is a federal statute which prohibits racial discrimination. It was signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson on August 6, 1965.
The Brennan Center for Justice says the U.S. Supreme Court has weakened the Voting Rights Act, especially over the last 15 years. In 2013, the court ruled that states did not need federal approval for new rules, which the center says allowed states to make it harder for people to vote. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, 92.7 WMDX News.
Quay Walker is back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Green Bay, where the Packers finally have their middle linebacker, Quay Walker, back in action. The former first-round pick suffered an ankle injury last December against the Seahawks, but didn't have surgery until May.
I thought it was just a high ankle, so I thought it was just something that just was lingering on at the moment. And then I came back for OTAs and tried to do something. I just knew something wasn't feeling right. I didn't want it to, like, just to linger on throughout the season. So I was like, I think the smart idea, probably going to have surgery during OTAs and get it out of the way.
Baseball. The Brewers beat the Braves again, this time 7-2. Nothing special, just walks, stealing bases, RBIs.
We pecked away and got it done, but they left a lot of guys on base. It's kind of a little bit nerve-wracking. Freddie made some big pitches at some big times. You know, he really did. Credit to him.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. The series wrapping up today in Atlanta. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight, maybe a storm late, and lows in the mid-60s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, few showers and storms, heating up, highs up into the mid-80s. Hot and humid Friday, mostly sunny, highs within a few degrees of 90. Looking for a great place to live, shop, stay, and play?
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I didn't know what the hell Malort was. So here now, our own Carol, head of traffic, she's brought in Malort. Down the hatch. Cheers to Malort. Now, it went down fairly smooth, but the back end is ridiculously terrible. Judas Priest, that's terrible. Once is enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like my time with women.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome into the studio Northeast Wisconsin filmmaker Craig Kinnett, and Northeast Wisconsin singer-songwriter DeAndre Marie performs live. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. A voice for Madison. Real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie in this, the second hour of our afternoon broadcast, joined in the studio here in Racine Park, the studios of Civic Media, by my spectacular producer. His name is Jacob, and together we are taking, as always, your phone calls at 855-752-4842. That phone number once again, 855-752-4842. Jacob always reminds me that you can also be a part of our textual discussion by dropping a comment, a question, inquiry into the Dropbox as well, and we will be sure to get to that too. Delighted in the past hour to have Sandy Pendleton come on to talk with us all about reckless driving and the things that are available to us to remedy that problem. Isn't that very often the case? We know what the remedies are. We think about so many other issues out there that probably cannot be driven off the face of the planet, but nonetheless are challenges, the answers to which we already know. And if only we will apply them and invoke them and convince our legislators to engage in what should not be regarded as courageous or bold action, but nonetheless action that can make us all safe and secure. Thanking Sandy Pendleton for his advocacy and thanking you for also taking up focus on and advocacy for that important issue. Legislatures are once again back in the news. Indeed, you all know what's going on in Texas once again, even as we are on the air right now. It is difficult sometimes even to keep up with the news. We know what is happening there after the proposal by my president to create for the Texas legislature right now, again, a Republican majority there, has the capacity, had a hearing last week on a new map to create five revamped Senate congressional districts for the House of Representatives that would change not only the makeup of those congressional districts in Texas, but arguably deliver to the president, and this, of course, is the reason why he's advocating for this in Texas, deliver a few more votes when it comes to the incoming Congress of the United States of America, going to be sworn in, of course, in January of 2027, an election coming up in November of 26. This as a design, which the president has been very clear and overt about, to get those additional votes to ensure that he does not lose the House of Representatives. We know that right now, a razor thin majority in the hands of the Speaker of the House of Representatives. An awful lot of folks out there looking around the nation and predicting that perhaps the Democrats will take the House in the coming election, prompting once again this proposal, not only to Texas, but the president's identified other places like Missouri and Indiana, where this same practice could increase the number of so-called Republican if not safe, but secure districts that would go to the House of Representatives, ensuring that the Republican majority stays in place beyond November of 26 and well into the next Congress. That all going on, prompting, of course, as you know, major portions of that legislature to flee Texas, creating the situation where the legislators remaining, the leaders of the legislature there, declaring out of necessity under the rules of the legislature that there's no longer quorum, not enough people, quite literally not enough representatives there in the state legislature to vote. You have seen many of these folks on media nationwide, some of them in Chicago, other places around the nation, talking about what they're doing there. And all of this, of course, implicating not just Texas, not just our Congress, but also things like the Voting Rights Act and the future of voting in America, the legitimacy of how we go to the polls. Let's do some remembering about where we have been. Let's talk about the significance of the Voting Rights Act, voting, the franchise in particular, and give some sense, some rule of law sense to what this is all about. Let's begin here on the Maggie Dawn Show with a little bit of history coming out of not Wisconsin, although we've had this too. We plainly have had in our recent history, in our lifetimes, histories of walkout with respect to Act 10 and the legislation here. But we know that in June of 1870, there were 13 Texas senators who walked out of the Capitol there in Austin. They were trying to block a bill that would give the governor wartime powers to the governor. They were depriving, therefore, the upper chamber of the legislature there in Texas of the 2/3 quorum required to vote. They left the jurisdiction, robbing the leadership of the capacity to call for a vote. No quorum, no vote, no legislation, giving the governor wartime powers. The fleeing members were arrested at the time. The bill, stunningly, amazingly, eventually passed. It was called the Rump Senate incident, and it established quorum breaking as a minority party tactic that has persisted, has continued even since that time. The legislature is there in Texas, very much aware of what happened in June of 1870, very much on their minds these days. Now we have Democrats fleeing the legislature, removing themselves from the state, prompting all sorts of things, prompting threats of arrests, extraterritorial, extrajudicial or judicial arrests, and beyond the jurisdiction of the state of Texas to bring those folks back, going into the courts by the governor, trying to establish that judicially these folks have got to be compelled to come back. It's a part of their duty, Governor Abbott is maintaining. And there have been indeed significant similar quorum breaks in Texas, not just in June of 1870, upon which this recent activity is surely premised. Also in 1979, again in 2003, 2021 rather, Texas House Democrats now using those precedents, once again employing what is sometimes called a nuclear option. Thank goodness it does not involve nuclear devices, but it's regarded as blowing things up because it brings to an end the normal structure and prevents legislation from going forward. Here, it would be legislation that would redraw those congressional lines. We have seen that in the state of Wisconsin. Every state in the union does this. Here's the first question, of course. Why are they doing that now? Well, again, at the encouragement, undeniably, publicly of the president to do this, to recreate the lines there in the state of Texas, so that when Texans go to the polls in November of 2026, they will be in districts redrawn that make them much more likely to send Republicans to the Congress than they have before, creating five districts that are going to be Republican majority, highly likely, combining some districts that would cause at least a couple of the present House of Representatives members to have to fight out among themselves who is the candidate in that district. All sorts of things coming out of this map announced last week, a hearing on it, plans for voting on it in both houses right now, this week in Texas, stymied, at least for the moment, by these departures. And all of this coming about in the midst of our national discussion, as we all well know, about voting in America. This indeed, the latest chapter about gerrymandering, about drawing lines, about giving people the right to send people to their representatives, to the Congress, who are representatives, if not perfectly of them, at least who represent somewhat their basic views, and yes, indeed, some of their basic immutable characteristics as well, which gets us to the Voting Rights Act in particular. The Voting Rights Act, 1965, we know that well. More history as well. The United States Congress at the time identifies voting rights inhibitions and caused by voting policies and procedures in states around the nation, various rules and regulations that inhibit the franchise, preventing the Voting Rights Act fines by virtue of its legislative history, principally people of color, not just in the South, but around the nation, from voting because of the way that those policies and practices have been in place. And so the Congress in 1965, as a part of much of the major civil rights litigation and legislation of the 1960s, passes the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Very famously, Lyndon Johnson signs it into law there in the company of people like Martin Luther King, many other civil rights leaders at the time. And what does it do under Section 2, this major section of the Voting Rights Act? It says, you know what? That the notion of preventing people of color from voting is wrong. It is illegal. And there are mechanisms in this law that will prevent you from doing it. It federalizes the prohibition on stopping people of Black and African-American ancestry from voting. Also has a language component in it so that if indeed you do not speak English, that is also not a reason to go ahead and prohibit people from voting. Under Section 2, all sorts of litigation initiated in the years that follow. That's the basic core provision of the law. And it is significant that under Section 2, ever since 1965, it is, interestingly, believe it or not, it's private citizens, it's private entities, it's nonprofit groups, it's people out there, non-government groups that have been the principal movers and shakers when it comes to filing lawsuits around the country in federal district courts, yes, going up to appellate courts as well, enforcing Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and saying, we have got a situation here where there are rules and regulations by our state, by our locality, that are preventing people from voting here in our jurisdiction. Judge, jury, come in and remedy that by, number one, identifying the problem, identifying with particularity, specificity, what is the nature of that prohibition, and then identifying a remedy. That's called the remediation portion of it. That's the remedy of this. How are we going to get around that and stop that from happening? That's been going on, private parties and, yes, also government. It is significant that ever since 1965, the great majority of the pieces of litigation in our federal courts have not been initiated, not initiated by our U.S. Department of Justice. There's the Civil Rights Division, the Voting Rights Section of Maine Justice that takes these on. And yes, they do a lot of those cases out there. They're very important to know about, and you've seen them in the history of our nation. But the great majority of these cases are initiated and pursued and litigated successfully, not always, but often successfully by private individuals. Why is that important? Because indeed, if things that are happening in Texas result in those same kinds of things, it's entirely possible that private groups, private individuals, people aggrieved by these newly drawn lines will go into court and seek enforcement under Section 2. Significantly, recently, that in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, that is those bunch of states just to our west here, Minnesota and Iowa, down to Arkansas, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, that's the Eighth Circuit in America. That Court of Appeals becomes an outlier in the entire nation by saying for the first time in our nation's history that only the government can file these lawsuits. The Supreme Court, interestingly, in one of its recent decisions, its emergency docket decisions, stands that down. But all of this, once again, underscoring the heightened focus now in Texas, arguably in other states under these laws, focusing on voting. When we come back, more about that, more about what the Supreme Court is going to be taking up, and more about what comes in the wake of what we're seeing right now in Texas. All that here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Get ready, Madison. El Sazon Jarocho is now open on Plaza Drive. 5-star authentic Mexican cuisine. Fresh, homemade, and the best prices in town. See why one review said best tacos I've ever had in my life. El Sazon Jarocho. You won't leave hungry, just happy.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. With Governor Tony Evers choosing not to run for a third term, that means we're going to have the first open race for governor in 16 years. We already know who some of the candidates will be. On the Democratic side, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez launched her campaign, and Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said he's running. On the Republican side, Washington County Executive Josh Shulman and Southeastern Wisconsin Business Executive Bill Berrien are running. Many more are expected to join the race. And it's not just governor that will have an open race. We could see open races for attorney general, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and state treasurer, too. Couple that with what's happening in the state legislature, no longer under gerrymandered maps, the year 2026 is going to bring a rather unique moment for voters in Wisconsin to determine the path forward on a fresh new era for the state. I know some can be wary of change, but let's embrace this as the real opportunity that it is.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, guest hosting for Maggie in this, the second hour of our afternoon broadcast here. On the broadcast stations of Civic Media, it is Wednesday, August 6th. We are monitoring, as all of us do, what is going on in Texas, not just because of the importance of Texas, but also because of the significance for voting and for the franchise and for things like the Voting Rights Act, gerrymandering around the country, and the threats to do it in other places if Texas goes ahead. We'll get back to that right before the break, talking all about the consequences of attempts historically and recently to prevent people of color from voting, also people with language differences in our nation's history and our nation's community. Everyone, immutable characteristics entitled to vote cannot be deprived of that right based upon those kinds of immutable characteristics. And so we monitor what is going on right now in Texas. We have the governor, of course, his name is Greg Abbott. He, on a regular basis, almost a daily basis, calling upon those House Democrats to return from various places around the country to come back. A couple of days ago, 3 or 4 days ago, issuing a major statement talking about the legalities of what they have done, suggesting they may be arrested, suggesting that court action may follow, that indeed their positions, their roles, their places in the legislature may be declared vacant by virtue of what they're doing. And what they're doing, of course, is a strategy not unknown in Texas, as we talked about historically. Also not unknown in other states right here in Wisconsin is to deprive the legislature, the leadership, of the quorum that it needs to pass legislation. And that includes its change in maps. Now, you may say, well, gee, didn't we all do this just a few years ago? And yes, that's been the tradition after every census in years ending in a zero. The United States Bureau of the Census gives us reports in each state about the populations, the numbers, where those numbers of population are located in the states. Remedies are accomplished both between states, but mostly inside states, to redraw lines. We did that here in Wisconsin. We had legislation. We had attempts by the governor and by the legislature at odds about those lines. And ultimately, we settled. We settled on new maps here in the state of Wisconsin. The legislature doing that, obviously, right in the middle of this decade, 2025, not in a post-census year. Can they do it? Sure, they can do it. They've got the legislative authority to do it, but they need to have a quorum, of course. And indeed, they will probably, like most states, do this yet again in about 5, maybe 6 years after the next census is taken as well. All of this prompting other governors, like, you know them well, Governor Gavin Newsom in California, saying we will fight fire with fire, talking about how he does not normally appreciate and embrace gerrymandering, but saying if indeed Texans do it, if the Texas legislature hands to the United States Congress, and yes, indirectly, the United States president, a majority in the House of Representatives, he will pursue the same thing. It is much more challenging in the state of California because there you've got an independent commission that draws these lines. And they have gotten an awful lot of support, bipartisan support historically, for drawing these lines in a way that does not accomplish what we normally think about as political partisan gerrymandering. Some challenges there. But we've also got Governor, just to our south here, Governor Pritzker, also talking about Illinois. We've got Kathy Hochul in New York likewise commenting about the events in Texas and saying if indeed this is the national strategy by this one governor, Greg Abbott, the other governors, including Kathy Hochul, arguably the others as well, may follow suit and attempt to redraw the lines in their particular states, prompting what could well be a brush fire throughout the United States, not literally, of these kinds of actions, a whole new round of redrawing lines in the coming years. We necessarily need to follow well what is going on in Texas. That will give us a bit of a canary in the coal mine indication of what might happen down the road. Along the way, a couple of more interesting things. My former boss, Eric Holder, former Attorney General of the United States of America, a great advocate for the Voting Rights Act, a great pleasure and honor to serve in his administration, that of Barack Obama, who enforced Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, even in the wake of the Supreme Court's attempts, they did it on two occasions, to limit Sections 4 and 5, and more recently, Section 2. Those cases, also a part of our recent history. Eric Holder, in the wake of his spectacular term as our attorney general, starting an initiative that fights back against these gerrymandering efforts, these line-drawing efforts that accomplish inappropriate racial gerrymanders and also inappropriate political gerrymanders. Eric Holder recently saying, I'm doing an about face. I'm going in the opposite direction, announcing that he is now in favor of them because they will preserve democracy. If, in fact, what happens in Texas is what we are seeing happening in Texas, if that comes to fruition there, Eric Holder saying he is going to recast the focus of his work to promote gerrymandering nationwide as a way of responding to the rule of law attack going on by trying to influence and change the very nature of our House of Representatives. We know as well the Supreme Court is also playing with and entertaining this Louisiana case that they decided specifically not to decide this past term, another voting case. It's going to animate largely what happens in the coming term of the Supreme Court. Comes out of Louisiana, and the court-ordered decision to create two majority black congressional districts in that state, prompting a suit there about a violation, arguably, of the Voting Rights Act under the Constitution. That case percolating up again by the Supreme Court just this past week as they announce new questions that they're going to entertain. When we come back, we're going to entertain discussion with another colleague and friend named Dean Muller. He's going to come to us to talk about an initiative called Wisconsin for Environmental Justice. We're going to chat all about the work of Dean's initiatives and that of a steering committee there, the new things that they have announced, and again, the ways in which you can be a part of environmental enforcement here in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. All of that as the Maggie Dawn Show continues after this.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. More and more Wisconsin sheriff's offices are making deals with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Under some of these programs, local law enforcement can essentially operate as immigration authorities. The ACLU says 3 years ago, 8 Wisconsin counties were signed on to this program. Well, 7 more have joined just since President Donald Trump took office. Now 13 counties across Wisconsin have formal 287G agreements with ICE. Last week, we reported that at least 3 sheriff's departments across the state have signed agreements with ICE to house people before deportation. Before that, the only ICE detention facility in Wisconsin was Dodge Detention in Juneau. The ACLU report shows that ICE has requested more than 3,000 detainers in Wisconsin over the last 4 years. When honored, those detainers allow someone to be transferred directly to ICE from local sheriff's departments without a warrant signed by a judge. It's optional, but most Wisconsin sheriffs choose to honor them. The Dane County Sheriff's Office does not, which recently drew the ire of the Department of Homeland Security. Meanwhile, a Milwaukee religious group has joined a lawsuit fighting ICE arrests on church property, all after ICE arrested someone at a Lutheran church in Wisconsin. Stuart J. Waddles reports.
It was an ICE arrest at a Lutheran church in Waukesha that has led to a lawsuit from a Milwaukee-based Lutheran association. The WPR report says back in May, someone was taken into custody at Ascension Lutheran Church in Waukesha. Now the Greater Milwaukee Synod, which reps dozens of area churches, has joined a nationwide lawsuit against a policy allowing immigration agents inside churches. The lawsuit claims the policy change from Washington has scared people away from worship services and has harmed church communities. They say the government action, which they want stopped, interferes with religious freedom.
That's Stuart J. Waddles. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, 92.7 WMDX News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Actor Jonathan Joss was fatally shot outside his home after a fight with a neighbor in early June. Joss had played John Redcorn on King of the Hill since 1996 after the original voice actor who played Redcorn passed away. Redcorn was honored during the season 14 finale of the show Monday night. Zigfredo Alvarez was charged with first-degree murder after the shooting but was later released on a $200,000 bond. San Antonio police initially said the murder of Joss, who was gay, had nothing to do with his sexuality, but have since walked that back, saying that they spoke too soon, and the investigation is ongoing. San Antonio Police Chief William McManus recently expressed sympathy to the San Antonio LGBTQ plus community over the loss of Joss and says the department is committed to pursuing every lead in the tragic case. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight, maybe a storm late, and lows in the mid-60s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, few showers and storms, heating up, highs up into the mid-80s. Hot and humid Friday, mostly sunny, highs within a few degrees of 90. Looking for a great place to live, shop, stay, and play?
The John and Gordy Show.
It's easy to get to Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look. It's 82 right now.
Okay. I still can't understand knuckleheads that go in and buy this stuff because it's cheap. Is that really the value you put on your life? Cheap cases of beer? Oh, my God. I had to get my license. I've been saving it up for 20 years.
You've been carrying that around a long time.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. As summer winds down, we're still enjoying the outdoors. We'll be joined by Casey Hicks of the Wisconsin Conservation Voters next time to talk about how we preserve Wisconsin's outdoor heritage. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I host a program on Saturday mornings called Amicus Alaro. We're going to be talking this coming weekend about some trends inside the judiciary involving the actions of federal district court judges and appellate court judges. Some of them may be defying Supreme Court justices along the way. We're also going to be talking about inside the Department of Justice, the reputation that the department is increasingly experiencing when it comes to engagements with that same judiciary. That is coming up this Saturday. Right now, I am delighted. I am honored to call into our discussion here on the Maggie Dawn Show another friend, a colleague, an affiliate, an associate of mine. His name is Dean Muller. Dean is the president and the consultant, the leader, the driver of a wonderful initiative called the Wisconsin for Environmental Justice Program Initiative Drive, and in particular, focusing upon the fossil fuel industry here in the state of Wisconsin. The notion of using tort claims, that's right, tort litigation in state courts to secure funds to address environmental issues here in the state of Wisconsin. It is an important focus. It is a tremendously creative and innovative and energized and systemic way of approaching some of the environmental issues here. And Dean Muller, so pleased to have him a part of our broadcast this afternoon. Dean is in charge of that initiative with a steering committee. Great members. Dean Muller, thank you and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
Outstanding. So, Dean, you have been advocating in this area for a while. I want my listeners to learn more about you, where this initiative comes from. Why is it that it has attracted your attention in particular? What inside you compels you to do this? And why this particular theory and this particular strategy going forward? What animates you, my friend?
Well, I guess the short, quick answer I could say is that, you know, I was asked to head up this organization, and I'm not very good at saying no. But particularly with respect to social justice issues, I have had a long career of working in that area. I come from more the business side of things, the business management, the investment field. I thought back at the time, certainly very unique from the standpoint that I certainly catered to those types of individuals that wanted their portfolios invested in a more socially responsible manner. That led me to working with a lot of institutions. I was asked by Milwaukee County way back when they wanted to divest from South Africa. And so I assisted them in accomplishing that. The Library Foundation here in Milwaukee was another institution that wanted to do that. So I facilitated that. So that's, you know, that's typically viewed as kind of the, you know, the avoidance. You avoid stocks that you don't want to invest in.
Right.
Now, the other approach is activism, stockholder activism. And I had the good fortune of working with Father Michael Crosby, a Capuchin priest at St. Ben's. And one of the things he focused on was stockholder activism. And if you can all recall back to when there was such a thing as Joe Camel. And Joe Camel was cool. He smoked, and it was a cartoon character. And more kids knew about Joe Camel than Mickey Mouse. Mm. That's how powerful that ad campaign was. It was on for like 8 years. And Father Mike, you know, I helped him pretty much. I, you know, was the single force in getting the tobacco industry to stop running those ads. And of course, then there was a tobacco settlement that came out of that that settled in the year 2000. And the last thing that he was able to accomplish before he passed away was getting a scientist on the Exxon board. So It was indeed a pleasure to work with him. So has been my background, my affliction, my DNA, whatever. And so consequently, this leads me to this. And I am retired. I often say that I'm old, and that's one of my chief criteria for doing this. I can remember when it was much better in Wisconsin in terms of its weather, and it's still beautiful, but you know, the winters aren't like they used to be, and I think we can all identify that, even going back 5 and 10 years ago. I am not an attorney, not a scientist, not an engineer, and certainly some of those are some of the key aspects of something that is involved as this is, which is certainly a lot of hard science and when we talk about infrastructure, the impact that climate change has had on our infrastructure is certainly very significant, and being knowledgeable about that. Yes, I have certainly tried to educate myself to a very high level to be prepared, to work very diligently with elected officials to accomplish what we're about to do. So I think it's a very important exercise to be involved in. To be quite honest, I just can't go to bed early and pretend it's not happening.
So, concerned about the future of your state, the future of our nation, right? And
absolutely. And I have, two adult children and four lovely granddaughters. And what will their world be like as it continues to change as rapidly as is? I mean, I just heard on this station, we've now at 23 days of Canadian smoke, and we can't blame the Canadians for that. Mm-hmm. It is a function of climate change, and I do get I'm kind of like that uncle that you have to invite to the Thanksgiving table who because he's family, but he comes there with this host of conspiracy type things spewing out. No, I'm coming there saying we should have a conversation over the Thanksgiving table or any table about climate change, and ask the question, why is that?
Why
is this happening? Yeah. With climate change, yes, but why is climate change happening? Well, right. we lead it to the source, which is the fossil fuel industry and our extensive use of that non-renewable resource. You know, we extract a resource that was put under the ground 150 million years ago. Just think about that, 150 million years ago, and we extract it. And we put a match to it. That's the coal, gas, and oil. And it releases enormous amounts of carbon into the atmosphere. And actually, it only operates at about 15% efficiency. So I realize that's the system we have. And it has provided us with a significant quality, a standard of living that is unparalleled. But nevertheless, the consequences are
consequences. Yeah.
And that's what we need to start to have the conversation about, and that's where it starts, is a conversation about it and connecting those dots and then coming to the realization of what we might begin to do about it.
Right. And so connecting some of those dots, exactly, Dean, is focusing on the fossil fuel industry. You had a report that came out last summer that indicated there's fossil fuels cause about $16 billion with a B, in climate-related mediation costs, state of Wisconsin alone. And 70% of those costs falling directly on local governments as well. Right. Tell us about some of the findings and why those statistics and why that also animates the work that you and others do with Wisconsin for Environmental Justice.
Well, the study comes from a lot of data that's out there, and it was collected and put into one place. So it's one report. There's actually 66 different categories that could have gone into the report. The report just focused on basically 13, the one of the more expensive. Are high ticket categories. I mean, some people are somewhat surprised when they see the report. Obviously, we're talking about, you know, flood mitigation and those sorts of things. But, you know, tree canopy ranks very high, that we need to plant more trees. And obviously, that takes CO2 out of the environment, and it also provides shade for our buildings. We need to install air conditioning in more public buildings because they're not air conditioned. And some of this is a little bit, you know, we're not talking about in this particular study, you know, build more solar panels or anything of that sort. It was just basic remediation, roads, bridges, those sorts of things. As I said, air conditioning is one of the things. Cooling centers, we need more of those and so forth. We're seeing those types of indications already. And at my request, they included some health issues, which had to do with the increase in the tick population, the mosquito population, and the health effects that come from that. So that's, and the powerful thing about this study, is that we can extract data from this particular report, and we can apply it to individual cities and counties. We can apply it to villages, to townships, so that they can see specifically what their cost will be. And as you mentioned quite correctly, 70% of the cost does fall on cities and counties. It makes sense because they're the ones responsible for the majority of the infrastructure. And that's a compelling part of the report. So we use it as a very important educational tool to talk to elected officials about the rising costs that they're going to be experiencing. And of course, I think we would all agree that budgets for state and local at the county and city level are very, very strained. They are running on empty, and consequently, they will need more revenue. And I think this is our bottom line goal, is to create an ongoing revenue stream for cities and counties, which is desperately needed by them. And we, you know, we would hope that elected officials would see that and want to do that, because the other source of revenue is us, the taxpayers. Right. And fundamentally, what we're doing here is we're shifting the cost to those who are responsible.
Absolutely, which is a fundamental notion of rule of law out there, right? And so let's get into that. Let's talk a little bit about the legal theories. Again, don't have to be lawyers to understand this, not judges, but the notion is tort claims, right? Tort litigation. Right. I think you're proposing this principally in state courts. And the notion is that because the fossil fuel industry identified with particular entities out there causing the damage, again, principally to localities, municipalities you've described, responsible for that. And so the municipality is saying, all right, you have damaged us in that infrastructure you just described, Dean. And therefore, we are seeking monies from you to repair that, to make us whole again, a judgment. And we can then use those monies to do just that, but it involves this, again, not novel litigation by any means, tort litigation. Tort, of course, meaning wrong, happens all the time in our state courts, our federal courts as well. Talk with us more about that particular strategy and the notion, again, I think is fascinating, that this does not have to be federal litigation, doesn't have to be comprehensive litigation across the state of Wisconsin. You can go into a particular area, as you just said, and identify the problem, focus on that problem, and bring that tort litigation in that particular venue. Tell us more about your particular vision for that and how that would work.
Well, I think that the approach we've taken, as I said, is extrapolating the data from the overall report, putting that on a page, basically making some comparisons for them. So maybe your budget for a particular city is 1x, and maybe the cost of its remediation is 1x as well. So obviously that's a very impactful relationship of numbers that needs to be looked at seriously. And of course, I realized one of the challenges we face with this is that this is an easy thing to put off and pretend it's not going to happen not that quickly, and that's been a chief culprit of people taking action on this issue, whether it's through this approach that we're taking or through other types of action with respect to climate change, because it is such a slow moving train wreck, but it is a serious train wreck. There's no question about that. Right. So yes, these are some of the things we talk about with elected officials, but yes, that has been an ongoing strategy with us to talk to different elected officials at all levels, at all parts of the state, with respect to how we can approach this problem.
And to advocate with them and for them, right?
And I can't emphasize enough the fact that this is, like you've alluded to already quite correctly, that this is not a far off problem. This is a grassroots problem that can be dealt with locally.
Right. And Dean, when we come back, I'm going to ask you more about how people can get involved, how you implement this, what your steering committee is all about, your membership is all about. I know you've got some recently rearticulated missions and some strategies. We want to chat about all of that when we come back. We'll do that right here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's a party on the patio at the Lazy Oaf Lounge, and you're invited every Tuesday at 5:30. It's just Merle and a girl, and Thursdays on the patio feature singer-songwriter Shelly Faith.
Well, hey, bartender, won't you pour me another?
Music starts at 5:30. It's live music on the patio at the Lazy Oaf Lounge every Tuesday and Thursday. The Lazy Oaf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Find specials, menus, and more at LazyOafLounge.com.
Hey, Gordy, I gotta admit, these hearing aids from Madison Hearing Aid Center changed my life.
Mine too, John. I thought I needed subtitles to talk to my grandkids.
And these aren't those old giant clunkers we saw in the old days. It's got Bluetooth, it's rechargeable, the works.
Yeah, my phone connects straight to my ears. I'm basically a cyborg now.
Hey, you just figured out texting last year, too.
Yeah, baby steps. But I did call Madison Hearing Aid Center, and you should too. 608-249-4077.
608-249-4077. Tell them John and Gordy sent you.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. Stroke risk may increase. Eliquis can cause serious and potentially fatal bleeding. Don't take if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or bleed longer. A spinal injection increases blood clot risk, which may cause paralysis. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or bruising, or back pain, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, or incontinence. Aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Streaming TV is where it's at. It's not about cutting the cord anymore. It's all about your customized TV options. With the best and cheapest high-speed internet and your own TV subscriptions, we've got your dream TV lineup. Between wired and satellite internet and TV, save money and get more internet speed and better TV today by calling the Whole Home Connect.
800-217-9129. 800-217-9129. 800-217-9129.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie this afternoon, and delighted, honored to have an associate, a friend, a colleague of all of ours. His name is Dean Muller. He's the president of Wisconsin for Environmental Justice. Dean is here chatting with me, chatting with you about this major initiative that has been underway for a while, gathering steam, gathering focus and attention across the state of Wisconsin and beyond, using the science, right, Dean? Using the things we know to identify the problem and find this way forward through this notion of civil litigation, tort litigation that would bring money into local coffers and other sources of funds for localities to remediate the results of the fossil fuel industry and the things that they have done. You and I talked recently about this major decision coming out from the World Court just a couple of weeks ago, saying that it is a moral responsibility, they said, to address these issues of climate and change, and that if countries and governments do not do this, they're actually engaging in wrongdoing. And I know that obviously you and your membership take a great deal of support and meaning from that. But also, it has been a part of your initiative to make this very local and make it meaningful locally and regionally here in the state of Wisconsin. It is not just a world court out there. It's making it significant right here in our own backyards. Talk with us a bit more again about this overall notion that you can indeed make some changes here, and that your group, in particular, Wisconsin for Environmental Justice, has got some missions and some purposes, some practical things that you can do as we go forward.
One of the things we emphasize as an organization is, what are we trying to accomplish? We're trying to create a recurring revenue stream for local government. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. And of course, I could say, I suppose somewhat facetiously, we could ask, you know, and people believe in accountability, and, you know, and the fossil fuel needs to be held accountable for this. So we could ask them to pay, you know, but I don't think they're going to. I don't think they're going to. So that would mean we need to make a claim in a court of law. And that's where the justice comes into the picture here. This is part of a national effort. There's about 30 to 40 entities. About a third of them are counties, a third of them are cities, and a third of them are states that have filed, mostly on the East Coast, West Coast, but in the Midwest. Minnesota filed about 2 years ago, and the city of Chicago filed last summer, and Michigan is in the process of filing. So we are surrounded in Wisconsin, and of course, you know, Wisconsin does have, right, a very, very prestigious history in terms of, we created Earth Day.
Yes, right. So Gaylord Nelson, right? Right.
Gaylord Nelson, and a track record of bipartisanship. Knowles, mm-hmm, Nelson, is should be acknowledged as well. So our approach then is to build a coalition as quickly as we possibly can through social media and so forth, and connecting with those other social justice organizations. We assume from the outset that everyone in this state is an environmentalist,
yes,
one sort or another.
And it should
here.
Be a partisan issue, right? Yeah, as you've said, it's not exactly political. I mean, right? Everybody should be concerned about this.
The people hunt, the fish, the people that do birding, the people like preservation of monarch habitat. On and on it goes. I don't care if you're out there hunting for mushrooms. I mean, you know, we need to preserve our wonderful state, and we need to take actions to do that. And the notion that you mentioned is very unique in terms of using a tort claim, because it stays in state court, and it'll be litigated in state court. And the fossil fuel industry would like it to go to federal court, but they have not been successful in accomplishing that. That's a whole other discussion. But the focus here is to talk to local officials at the local level. This is something that we can do as citizens at the local level, at the city level, at the county level, villages and so forth. People talking to their elected officials, they begging the first question, do you need more money? Do you need more revenue? And I think the obvious answer is yes. I mean, whether you're talking about Milwaukee, which is cutting bus lines because of a lack of funds, or you're talking about any other city or municipality, they all struggle to pay their bills. And the only other option, I think I was just hearing about, there's how many counties or cities are doing wheel taxes, mm-hmm, to raise revenue. I mean, it's all around us. So this is a way of raising more revenue. Will it happen right away? No, it's going to take a little bit of time. And the other thing I would emphasize, too, is one of the pushbacks we get from elected officials when we talk to them is that they don't have money to pay lawyers to litigate. And that is not an issue, because this litigation is going to be handled by firms who handle these cases on a contingency basis. Specifically said, they will not get paid anything in terms of legal fees unless they prevail in court. So that is not an impediment or an issue here. Now, sometimes people might say, well, you want to take on the fossil fuel industry, you they're the bad guys. Well, it's not a bad guy, good guy issue. I mean, from the standpoint that these are costs that we are currently incurring right now, and we're basically shifting them to the entity that should be held accountable for it. I mean, when we talk about, you know, the Milwaukee River cleanup, which is going to be $500 million, well, who's paying for that? Well, we're paying for that as taxpayers. Who put that sludge, industrial sludge, in the river? Well, it was the industries that are no longer here. They're gone now.
Right.
I mean, and of course, the Fox River was probably a better example, because that was $1 billion. And the paper companies that polluted it ended up, through court action, paying for a good portion of that. So this is basic accountability is what we're talking about. No, you need to clean up after yourself. And I'm not again a lawyer, but I think it's a pretty compelling case when you can use the evidence that the party you're going after for monetary damages and provide you with evidence that they knew what they were doing, and they knew that it was going to be damaging to the environment. They knew that court records show back in the 70s. So,
and Dean, if our listeners
want,
and listeners want to be a part of this, what do they do? How do we get in touch with you, and what can they do here in the last few seconds?
If they simply Google Wisconsin for environmental justice, they will find us. And then the other more specific is the website is W4EJ.org, W4EJ.org, and you can find me there. We'd love to have participation. There is a petition on there that people can sign showing their support for what we're trying to do. And, you know, when it comes time to talk to elected officials, you know, we need people
we'll do it. You'll do it, right? That's Dean Muller. He's the president of Wisconsin for Environmental Justice. Dean, thank you so much for being a part of our broadcast this afternoon. We'll look forward for more from you in the future. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Sam.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. The man police suspect is behind today's shooting at Fort Stewart in Georgia is Cornelius Radford, a 28-year-old Army sergeant. Five other soldiers were wounded in that incident. All are expected to recover. In the Oval Office this afternoon, meeting with President Trump, Apple CEO Tim Cook.
Mr. President, thank you very much for having me here today. You've been a great advocate for American innovation and manufacturing. I'm grateful for your leadership and your commitment.
President Trump announcing the tech giant will invest $100 billion in the U.S. That's on top of an existing $500 billion investment. Trump has threatened to impose 25% tariffs on imported smartphones, including iPhones, unless production moves to the U.S. Apple has made no such commitment. The White House is also saying the administration is open to a meeting between Trump, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This is ABC News.